another episode of the Mighty Black NPR. It's me, Daniel Crudup, the Black Goddamn Kaiser, a.k.a. Black Dio Brando, representing the Pregame Radio Network. I'm on the board. I believe it's Brooklyn Black, but sometimes it's Tasha Wright. Hope everything's going good with you guys. This episode was a bitch to do. Not going to lie, this is when it feels like work. A lot of stuff happened in the news, as well as trying to find and put a spin on it. So this week we're going to be talking about Cardi Gate, surviving Cardi B. I'm going to give my point of view. I didn't talk about it online at all. So it's a fresh take. Do I think that I agree with it, disagree with it, defending it? We'll find out at 9:15. I believe we're going to have a guest tonight, one of our favorites. We will find out at 9:15. I don't want to screw the pooch on that. Always, you can get in touch with us at Black NPR Pod on Twitter.com. Trying to do better with updating on that, as well as the Black NPR at Outlook.com. So let's jump into it. This is the thing that was going to make this week a bitch and a fucking half to talk about. I mean, I tried to be objective, but not when it comes to this particular subject. The Mueller report. Okay, so I don't know how much you guys know about it. When there was kind of an idea, like there's an illusion that there might be some sort of collusion between Trump and the Russia probe. They said, okay, we're going to put this up, we're going to investigate it, figure out how to get to the bottom of it. And they put in the hands of Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. Some other people went to jail because of this. Like, he went through all the evidence, figured it all out. I think a lot of us who were against Trump, or just majority of people, was like, all right, when this comes out, it's going to be obvious. And I think a lot of us, me included, forgot how specific what they were looking for was. So, you know, Mueller was looking for specific things, then it has to also then get condensed through the DA, and the DA that got picked was somebody that Trump picked specifically because he knew that he was going to observe this the most beneficial way for him. So nothing's happened, guys. You know, all the Democrats are kind of saying, like, hey, everybody, we need to kind of move forward, but there's really no easy way to slice it that this was a blow to anything 100% are against Trump. Just so today in the Post, Washington Post, we have articles in regards to saying, like, Obama and all the Pelosi and just pretty much all the leadership is kind of trying to convince all of the freshman leaders to kind of go, like, hey, look, you know, this sucks, but don't give up, which you can't, because I think we all felt some level of push towards some normalcy in the last election and then now in terms of, you know, what people kind of said, hey, we could do something, there's actual change. So to come up and find out that this dude did all this shit and we waited all this time and nothing happened is a real kick in the nuts. But we'll find out. Again, that was just what DA Barr saw. It might be some more to it. And then there's also the New York prosecutors are kind of trying to find out what he did when he was here. I wouldn't hold my breath. I'd say the only way, and if you didn't hear it, oh, that's another thing, too. To hear all of our older shows, especially the ones that have a little more evergreen energy to it, especially the political ones, the Trials and Nods, go to pregameradio.net, look at our catalog, go to iTunes, go to pregame radio on iTunes and Spotify, and make a point to check out our catalog. It's like last week's show, so it was fantastic, and we kind of went into all of the Democratic candidates. And, you know, I think we kind of came to conclusion, no matter who we get, regardless of what your feelings are, you vote for them. But I know not all of you guys kind of are pulling that direction. So if you are a Republican, if you are a right-leaning, or if you're a Trump supporter even, you know, I don't want you to feel like you're out. You know what I mean? You have a point of view, and I would love to hear it. So this is something I should have did earlier, so my bad. The number here is 347-857-4302. So at any point, even during a news segment, because what I'm going to start doing is saying that, like, hey, at any point during a news segment, you guys want to, like, talk and expand it out, I could push the rest of the show back if it's a pertinent conversation. I don't want to stop any conversation that may be germane in that moment. So feel free to give me a ring, let me know what's going on, and we can take it from there. What else do we have going in the news? So we also have the Cardi B thing, but we're not going to talk about that here. We'll talk about that for about an hour and change later. Our boy Jussie Smollett, charges were dropped. I took my hand off of this. I kind of let this go because it's been up and down and up and down. I'm going to take the argument that maybe something occurred or some malfeasance, but it's not enough for them to prove an open court, because that's a big thing that I don't think we like to like factor in, that it's something that they really couldn't prove one way or the other and make it stick. So they gave him community service, and they're not giving him his bail back, which is, if he was innocent, they'd give him his bail back. But I think they probably just came to a conclusion and said, like, hey, we don't need this right now. So that's the situation. So Jussie's fine, and the writers and Fox are standing with Jussie now. We're all back on board with Jussie. Gussie's the gay Tupac. He figured it out. You know what I'm saying? Or he's a Tupac. Take for that what you will. Also, the national emergency with the wall, which is so crazy when I do these news stories. It seems like I did some of these stories years ago. In reality, I did them a couple of weeks back, like the one specifically about the wall. Remember the wall? Remember that shit? Well, this week, Trump national emergency stands. The House was unable to override a veto. Pretty much Trump says, I had a national emergency. I need you to run me that bread. And the Congress goes, nah, nigga, chill. And the Senate was like, I don't know, fam. And so Trump goes like this, no. And he has the power to veto it. But he vetoed it, and I think you have to have a certain amount of people in the House. And if I don't know, I will get back to you guys next week. Feel free to email me if you have the right answer. And he vetoed it, and the veto stands. So it looks at the moment, right now, that national emergency stands, and he's going to get billions of dollars for this damn wall. The vote was 248-181, falling short of the two-thirds, so it's not half, two-thirds. Only 14 Republicans, and I'm pretty confident the majority of those Republicans were able to vote because they're in states that are pretty much like one way or the other. But that Mueller report, I'm not going to lie, probably emboldened a lot of these people who were probably on the fence, because Trump's riding high. If you don't believe that he's not riding high, he's riding extremely high. I want to make sure that I'm getting all of our info in. Feel free during this next one, we'll be talking about Cardi B, to give a call in. I'll give this number one more time so I don't have to stop when we're talking. 347-857-4302. If you follow me on Twitter, please tweet at me. I'll respond to that on air. And then I guess one final story, and this is something I want to kind of go into at a later date. LeBron James. LeBron James has gone from the King and Michael Jordan heir apparent to like a bum. You know, like this is just between me and y'all. I'm just barbershop talking, but what happened, fam? Like, what all happened to your boy? Like, he made a decision once, and everybody was like, oh, you're a dick, but they rolled with him. Then he made another decision, and was like, all right, cool. And if for whatever reason now, just because he didn't make it to the fucking finals with Lonzo Ball and Ingram, which no one, I don't think, assumed he was going to be able to drag these motherfuckers through. Anywho, I want next week or one of these weeks, I want to have a sports episode. If you think that'd be something you're interested in, because I don't want to like hoist that shit on you, please hit me on the Twitter or the email. All right, so right now we're going to hop into the ad read and the song of the week. Song of the week is interesting to me. It's by a rapper I think a lot of you know by Logic, but it's produced by Mac DeMarco. So if you are someone who skews rock maybe, or you like a little indie cred, check Mac DeMarco. I find his songwriting to be immaculate, and apparently the man can do an indie R&B song, because this fucking slaps. So I'm going to let that go. We'll probably come back a little bit early. Again, I gave it a number, blacknprpod@twitter.com, and we'll be back right after this.
Yo, shout out to those that help us keep the lights on over here at Pregame Radio. Check out ME Productions for all your digital media production needs. Like them on Facebook at ME Productions with a Z, and email them at heyme.tv@gmail.com. Also check out LitBK. Check them out at litbkny.com. Check out their Black Star Power Tees featuring some of your favorite entertainers, and use the code PREGAMEISLIT at checkout for 20% off all your purchases. Also check out iCraveWear. Check them out at iCraveWear.com. Pick up your fax t-shirt representing your hood, and pick up your Brooklyn Certified pins, t-shirts, and more. Use the code PREGAME at checkout for 15% off your order.
probably rock your world. I'm probably gonna rock your world.
Shit slaps, man. Oh, dog. Yeah, I got the whole album. Hopefully, I'm listening through it. I really hope Mac DeMarco does more kind of Tori Moi type R&B. But cool, you're back to the Mighty Black Black NPR. It's Daniel Crudup, a.k.a. D.O. Brando, here with your topic of the week. We're getting some Cardi B. But first, before I forget, shout out to the Big Bear Collective, Brooklyn's premier CBD vendor. Follow them on Instagram at big.bear.collective for exclusive deals and access to private events. Again, that's Big Bear the Collective. I can speak on that. I love CBD oil now. Like, I'm not a big pot guy, but, like, I find, like, a few puffs of some CBD oil is like taking a cup of tea. So it's pretty rad. Give them a call out if you're interested or we can get into it. So let's get into it. Cardi B, right? Get into it. You might have a guest. Just ask me about the number, so I'll let you know when she gets on. But Cardi B, she was on one of her lives, being Cardi B, being very honest with herself. You know, I don't know if you heard of it, but she's being honest and saying that when she was a stripper, people were trying to, like, set her up, trying to, like, have sex with her, and she'd be like, hey, let's hook, pretty much a John-type situation. She would, like, get them fucked up and run their pockets. In essence, that's what she did. You know, there's some backlash. There's a lot of backlash. And I think a lot of you people think this show is going to be about me cascading or whatever. I think what she did is whatever. I don't think anyone shocked, tripped, or fucking rolled one of her Johns. Mike, what we're talking about tonight, I fooled you motherfuckers. We're talking about R. Kelly. Ha-ha. We're talking about Michael Jackson. Ha-ha. Because you dumb niggas, or some of you dumb niggas, have conflated that issue with those other issues. So tonight, we are going to be going into why people feel compulsed. And maybe you could argue and say why it is, but why people feel compulsed to say, why is the backlash for Cardi B not the same as the backlash for Bill Cosby? Because the word drug is in both of their scenarios. So let's get into it real quick. I want to make sure that if we do have the guest, I'll make sure that she gets a chance to weigh in with the initial before I go on my tangent. As you can tell, I'm heat. I'll get in there, Christina, you in?
Hello.
Hello, it's Christina Clemente, y'all.
Hey. I just want to initially say on the topic, do you remember the last time we talked and you asked me about how I felt about cancel culture?
Yes.
And I said that I can't agree with cancel culture. And
yeah.
You were asking, you know, oh, isn't it necessary sometimes? And this is why I don't agree with cancel culture. I think
okay.
that the public opinion court can be sometimes filled with idiots.
All right, so I'm gonna set my point, and then we can kind of go into what your point is, and then we can kind of go into it and leave our space open for discussion and debate. I feel that this particular situation is people going, see, there's a double standard, see, and I don't think anyone really cares about Cardi B at all, and I think it's kind of like for example, remember when they had that black serial killer. And that's like white people going like, oh, see that black serial killer. See, it's not just us. It's just like saying, but it's not even remotely close to the same. She drugged some people who were like trying to give us, you know, like trying to get a bus. So it's not saying that she was fucking them. Also, robbery and rape are two different things. But they're not even remotely fucking close, robbery and rape.
Very
they're not
different.
Even on the same level of things. You're doing something illegal and you get robbed. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I feel like people are using this to pry open an argument by saying we need to either leave them alone or we need to be just as angry at Cardi B because women want to be equal. And for whatever the reason, that's a bad thing.
Yep. That's the craziest
part. Yeah, because you're like, y'all want to be equal, so we need to like – now, for example, if Cardi B was drugging people and then like pegging them, then we're equal. That's an equal argument. But running their pockets is not even remotely close. That's more equivalent to that Facebook meme where somebody, after you finish having sex, you go in her purse and take her credit card information. That's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that? Why do you think from your, maybe from both angles, your point of view as a woman and your point of view as a professional, why do you think the response is as visceral as it is?
I think it's because there's a huge backlash against, you know, women looking for that equality. There's a huge backlash against that, and there's a lot of men that feel attacked by women out there fighting for equality and holding accountable people who have done things that they shouldn't have to women. And I think that people are angry about that. And so they have these convoluted ways of showing it, like saying, oh, look, see, why aren't you holding this person accountable? And they'll do so even if you're comparing something like apples and oranges. Just projection.
It's so visceral from people we know and from other spaces. I'm seeing talk pieces and going like, why don't you care? And why the media not treating this? And she just won a Grammy. And it's almost as if there's like a certain type of energy of like, hey, we need to, like, string her up because we strung up Bill Cosby and R. Kelly.
It's weird to me because, you know, these are people that are supposed to, some of which, that know hip-hop. And it's kind of like, ooh, are you sure you want to even open up that can of worms? Are we looking hip-hop artists as, oh, my gosh, you did this, when we have a plethora of hip-hop artists who we've always known have quote unquote come from the streets and done certain things.
Yeah. I've already kind of said low key on the lowest of keys. Biggie's right, but if you're gonna start throwing people out, I think Biggie, Pun, there's a lot of people who've done some like public shit in terms of just wailing on ladies, taking shit. Not even talking about just the crack selling. Mind you, we're never throwing nobody away for crack selling. You can't because we'll have nobody left. Right? So we'll keep it there for crack selling. But, like, Pun beat his woman into fucking mush. Like, even the son had to make a song going, like, yeah, it wasn't cool. No one has publicly, like, said, all right, we got to get Pun out of the paint. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
scrub his, because, you know, he has a big mural out here. We're not going to cover the mural up. So we'll give you that. Why we're not giving it to her is because it's her, A, and B, it was the men, because men are not supposed to get preyed upon. And C, because we've been going up the Michael. Did we ever just have a Michael Jackson discussion on the show? I don't think we did. Yeah, no, it's tough. It's a tough road to hoe. But I always got to say, I think that's a big part of it. Going like, why are we pushing on men? Why are we not addressing women? Now, I feel like if a woman did something funky, the problem here is, and then you could tell me if you agree or disagree, women are not really in a position to do the things that we're getting mad at these men for doing. Inversely, the same way that white people can't do the things that white people do to us. So women can't do the things that they do to men. Does that make sense? Am I saying that right?
Yes, and
the power dynamic is not set up as such that we can do it on a consistent basis.
Yes, but I have to be fair though.
Okay.
You know, and similarly to the way that, and these are unconscious biases that we have. Similar to the way that studies have shown that when white people see a white child and a black child of the same age, maybe 13 years old, male children, they unconsciously perceive the black male child as more dangerous and more intimidating and older. They've done these studies, you know, so we see it all the time when we see crimes committed by white folks versus black people, how the media portrays it and how people look at it and how people defend it. And I do have to say that unconsciously our biases are that women are not that much of a threat. So
that's not what you meant. I don't mean that they're not a threat. I'm just saying that, like, for example, rape. A man can rape a woman because men just generally physically are stronger than women. So that's going to happen more often and more consistently than a man raping a woman. A man will more likely be in a position of power to take advantage of a woman because a man is going to have the power structure to go, like, I have something to offer you, and if you don't do this thing, then you're going to lose your job. Now, women have done it for sure. 100% women have done this. I'm just saying more often than not, it will be a man because more often than not, men are in that position. That's what I was saying.
Yes, that's the conclusion of the matter. But I don't think a lot of people realize that because of, quote, the scary word patriarchy that nobody likes, the trigger word, because of patriarchy, you have women being set up as less of a threat. And when they're viewed that way, then in turn you're upset because of patriarchy has viewed women as less of a threat. And now it's like, oh, no, make them the same threat level. But the reality is exactly what you just said, that the way the power structure is, it isn't set up that way. Does that mean that there are not women that are out there and can be predators? Of course not. But the way the power structure is set up, it's not usually going to be that.
No, it can't be. That's the thing, is it can't be. It's like in this instance, Cardi B technically was not in a power position. She finessed a power position, but she wasn't in a power position. More times than not, she was in threat for getting raped. Like, that was a threat that she was under in that instance. Now, I'm not forgiving it. I don't think she was like, oh, we need to, like, break. She was a victim. Not at all. She did something wrong. I'll admit it. But
exactly.
She was not in a power position there. She made it a power position, and she went and kind of finagled a way to kind of, like, take advantage of the situation. But
absolutely,
she wasn't in a position to take advantage of this dude.
She's kind of like an undercover. It's like a really undercover weapon using a woman. And it's probably one of the oldest tricks in the book.
Honeypot. It's a honeypot.
You know, yeah, they send women to, you know, get men having a good time. And when they're not looking, that's, you know, how they attack. Or, you know, it happens all the time. It still happens. But it's like a covert weapon because you're not expecting it.
Because if it had been a dude, I don't think you would have allowed yourself to get so comfortable to get drugged in the first place.
True.
Yeah, but I don't think she was like looking at her like she needs me to cancel her and a survive. Like, when you say surviving Cardi B, you are harkening back to what I will say, and it might be hyperbole, like the monster of our age. Like, truly the monster of our age. Like, the shit that he's done over the course of the amount of time he's done, to how culpable we all are as a people for allowing this thing to continue.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's going to be, I can guarantee you, in 20, 40, 50 years' time, there's going to be college courses that are going to be, whole sections are going to be dedicated to this dude. Sociology classes, psychology classes, Black Studies, because it was a phenomena that we, to this day, still are defending what is undefendable.
Yeah, it's misplaced. It's misplaced protection.
Misplaced tribal, you know,
tons of articles, especially, you know, focusing on Black women and why, you know, in our community over the years we have protected Black men despite what they've done. And, you know, it can be understandable why we are so protective living in the society we are. But I still believe it's misplaced, and it's important for people to stand up and say, I understand that we live in a world that has us as public enemy number one. That does not mean that we can green light fuckery, you know? We can't.
Mm-hmm. Especially in 2019, especially with the track record that, like, you know, like at some level. So when you say that surviving Cardi B, we only have that nomenclature because there was a fucking 5-day or 4-day documentary that was about two hours each, filled with fresh horrors. Every day was new horrors. Because I watched it all in one day. I watched the majority of them in one day. It was just back to back to back to back. Like, what? No.
Still
seriously?
Haven't watched it.
Okay. I get it.
No.
I understand
nope,
it.
Nope.
But it was just the culpability of everybody. It wasn't just him fucking, you know what? No, I'm using fucking words. Him fucking on teenagers. That was partly it. Not him and his controlling and the fact that he was being like, it wasn't just him fucking them. Because then that makes it seem like there was some sort of wonderful relationship. It's just they were too young. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way
exactly.
To think about it. Maybe they just weren't, you know what I mean? Like, the problem was just their age. But everything else was fine. Like, they had a great relationship. Mm-hmm. It's just they were too young. And that was wrong. No, he was abusive. He took some girl's virginity face down on a couch. I mean, like, every day that I watched that, every about 15 minutes, you'd hear something new, like, fuck. And then after, like, he got away with it, then he started doing occult shit and trapping broads away and keeping them from going home and dicking them off and having, you know, and cutting them off from the people that they know. And, you know, like, you're not allowed to make phone calls to your family. You're not allowed to leave your room. Then there's like two chicks in the house. One to be a little bit older, and her job is just to kind of make the sex okay. So like the girl, one girl would be like 13, the other one would be like 19. The 19-year-old girl was to kind of groom the 13-year-old into how R. Kelly likes shit. Yeah, but here, that's just me briefly explaining what 4 days of 4 days, I think about an hour and a half each.
Mm-hmm.
What Cardi B ain't that, fam?
Well, yes, we know that's incomparable.
But that's the anger.
They are comparing because, you know, people, a lot of men and some women, we can't leave women out, are upset because it's misplaced. And it's a sad time. And I've been on certain online forums where white folks are saying, well, you know, y'all defend R. Kelly, so, you know.
Yeah.
Just throwing it in our faces because it's horrible, but, you know. Because at some point, if you don't figure this shit out,
like, get to the bottom of it, figure it out. Like, you can't make any movement or growth of saying, okay, well, this is what the situation is, where it's like, okay, well, we're going to protect R. Kelly. We need to figure him the fuck out. Makes sense. Who of R. Kelly, but then go like, oh, Cardi B does something. So that's one hand of it. The other hand is that Cardi B goes like, hey, I've done this stuff. And like, I was in a bad situation. So like, I was out there stripping and trying to like get money the only way I know how. We're now equating that to sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
If y'all would have been like, if she was like going like, I'm holier than thou and I'm in church and, or like I'm a role model now, then fair enough. That's false advertising. But she's never said anything other than the fact that she was out there. She lived a certain kind of life that she wasn't proud of. But, you know, she was, did what she did, and now she's doing this.
Thing we have, are we willing to look at our culture? Are we willing
to
look at things we're glorifying? And that's something that I've been saying is on Black folks. Like, we understand where the collective trauma from the community has come from. And we are very good at pointing out the things that white people have done. But as far as moving forward in our trauma, what are we willing to look at? Because that's going to start with us. I always tell people when I'm dealing with them individually, when you're talking about trauma, I'm like, okay, the trauma is not your fault, but the healing is on you.
Yeah.
The moving forward
the white
is
man
on
side,
you.
There's nothing a white man can do, right? Because we always go like, we want reparations, we want this, that, and a third. I'm like, we're just going to be rich and fucked up. Like, we're in a bad way, fam. We're in a bad, bad way. Like, that Chappelle's so sketch. Was so, like, we laughed about it, but in hindsight, that would have been depressing if it went down like that. Remember the fucking stock price of KFC went up? Like, I mean, like, it's just like, wow, shit. And that's what would happen. Like, you know, belt industry, the big dumb belt industry would go up $1 billion if they gave all these niggas money.
It's true. KFC
literally is a microcosm of what reparations would be. Niggas would buy cars they can't afford. Niggas would buy clothes that they don't fit properly. Niggas would buy a whole bunch of shit they don't need. Go on trips to places that they don't actually go to and experience. They just go to fucking take photos in front of. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're 100% right. The other thing, too, is I didn't talk about this the other day. Oh, we have a profit fucked up, but we're doing somewhat okay. Because I was watching, what was I watching yesterday? I was watching something from 2002, 2003. Trying to remember exactly what the fuck I was looking at, and it had Chinese people on it. Yeah, they had Chinese people, and pretty much it was like this. Oh no! I was looking at a playthrough of Grand Theft Auto 3, which came out in 2001, and the Chinese character sounded like this. And I quote from that game: "You don't know what I do. You look at me the wrong way." Like the whole. Fucked up shit. And I'm like, Chinese people had to deal with this shit as early as 2003. Mm-hmm. Indian people literally had Apu to about 2 years ago.
Wow.
If you think about it in terms of like Sambo, right? We haven't had to deal with like a legitimate Sambo in decades. Some of these people are still dealing with Sambo today. The stuff that we do have and we kind of made peace with, we need to kind of get better and understand, like, hey, we don't need to defend every piece of shit. You know what it reminds me of? When people defend their dad when their dad or their mom has been openly toxic. When their parent or family member or boyfriend or girlfriend, especially if it's a girl or boyfriend, because they'll defend a nigga to the end of the world. And, like, you know, when the story, I think I posted this, no, you weren't in that room. Guy did some foul shit, like, fucked her cousin, got the cousin pregnant. And then more or less it came out. And then she started yelling at the person going like, hey, he needs to like do better. I think it was like a real innocuous statement going like, hey, read the whole thing. Like, yeah, he needs to do better. Like, you know, like he's got kids. He just figured this whole thing out. She then goes, mind your fucking business, even though she's the one who posted it. You don't know him. He's a good man. You're a piece of shit. And you're just jealous that you don't got a fly bitch like me. That's what it is, though. That's literally what this whole R. Kelly thing is. It says you misdirected. You can't be mad at the person, because if you're mad at the person, there's a chance they might leave.
Yep, it's a very insecure kind of state of mind to be in, and I think that we don't like to recognize at times how very immature collectively
we all are.
We, as a people, you know. Things we want to let a lot of things slide when it comes to us, but we do not want to let other people slide.
No,
you know, when
there's no nuance. There's no nuance
exactly.
At all. Like with the whole Liam Neeson thing, I don't know how anyone feels about it. But like there was a nuance. It's like, hey, did he learn his lesson? It seemed was he contrite? The fact that he was going into trying to bludgeon a black man, did he do it? Like, was he really out there? Like, there was a lot more conversation that needed to happen in that moment, I think. That was just more on the lines of this cancer, this nigga, he's racist. And I felt in that moment, like, there was a learning opportunity in that space of someone going like, hey, I made a mistake. And that was a discussion that could have happened publicly, because it happened, but it'd be like, hey, you know, like, someone should have been like, hey, when he was doing his contrition rounds, it could have been like, hey, let's have a discussion, like a Gates, like a Louis Gates, could have pulled him aside. Let's do an interview, and just ask him, like, what has your relationship been like, black people? Like, honestly, like, how did you grow up? Like, what was your situation? Like,
exactly.
What was your situation growing up? What was your before that day, what was your opinion with black people? Did you like them, dislike them, whatever? Just be honest about it. And we could have had a teachable moment as opposed to just throwing a nigga clear away because we don't like what he said.
Well, I think that for most black people, and coming from a sociology point of view, I have to say that, you know, the same way, you know, in sociologist point of view, everyone is racist. Everyone is ethnocentric. Yes,
yeah.
We understand that black people cannot, you know, use their power the way white people can because of how the power structure is set up. But we all have judgmental views about different groups of people, and we have memberships in other groups and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like for black people, when you ask the question, and I'll ask you, can you be a racist and not a horrible, terrible person?
Yeah, you can be. I believe. All right, now this is going to sound crazy. I don't think Archie Bunker, the character on All in the Family, was a bad man.
Okay.
Archie Bunker wasn't bad. He was ignorant, and he wasn't raised properly, but he loved his wife and he loved his family. He didn't seem to have any real malicious intent. Now, was he a good person in the context of, like, I want to be his friend? No. But I think in terms of the context of just as a human being, I don't think he was, like, breaking any laws. I don't think he had any ill intention for, like, the Jeffersons. I think at his core, he would have let them in his house. You know what I mean? When they were in his house and he had an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously a lot of it was like caricatures, but I feel like he had very racist through lines, but they were more based on what he saw the world as. I don't think he felt any real, like, with, like, his, I mean, he was racist, but he was racist towards his son-in-law, but he let his son-in-law live in the house and fuck his daughter.
Well,
so, I mean, so
that's
like,
the thing. It's usually a continuum. It's usually a spectrum. You know, there are some people who are not, and I think that's how white people feel when you're like, yo, that's racist. They, you know, their mind goes to burning crosses on the line, on somebody's lawn, KKK, lynching people.
No, Christina, no. We're not going to skate over that Long Island shit you just did right there that you tried to clean up. You tried to clean up like I didn't hear it. All right, don't worry. Put one in the Long Island condo because you said lawn. And stop to go lawn. Got you. All right. Thought I was going to let that shit go. Go on.
But, you know, it's a continuum. Maybe they are not that racist, but perhaps they don't necessarily want a black person marrying their kid. And maybe they don't realize that until they have to confront it because their kid brings a black person home and they're like, oh, shoot, I got
you
some personal biases.
Bring it to your door.
You know,
like, I mean, a lot of people's like, I do like, oh, I'm good. I have no problem with black people. I have friends that work that are black. Cool. One's moving next door. Oof. And I think that also goes for us, too. Because I remember we were all going out. So a group of people I knew were going out. So I were going out. And then someone said, hey, I'm bringing my buddy from work. I was like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, oh, it's this guy. And his name was a very white name. And then someone was like, ugh. And then they dressed it up as like, I've had to, you know, dress it up as I have to deal with white people all day. I don't want to have to see this one. But it was like, yeah. But, like, this is a big group of people, and we're going to a space where we get to move around. So it's not like you're going to be up under this person 24-7. They're just not going to be in the group. So part of me understood you want to be able to say the N-word and not have to worry about repercussions. But the other way, it came, you know, that's, I get that. But it seemed more like I don't even want to deal with this dude on any level whatsoever.
And I'll be honest, too. I prefer the company of people that look like myself as well because, you know, it can seem like more of a safe space. And to be quite frank, white people and black people have a lot of cultural differences that you get tired of having to, you know, kind of deal with. And it is what it is. You know what I mean? So
we can explain another thing then before – oh, no, go finish your thing up, then I have a follow-up.
But black folks would really call you like an apologist, or there's a lot of black people that would be pissed at you for what you just said, not saying that a racist person is the scum of the earth.
They have to be the scum of the earth because
they have to be
the scum of the earth.
That's the other part of that is then now is a misogynist or somebody who's defending R. Kelly or who doesn't think that it's, you know, as bad as, you know, other people feel it is, Are they the scum of the earth? Are they bad people?
Misogyny,
you know, I think
people don't like women. So that's what you're saying? Or people who like...
Or people
I
don't really realize that they don't like women. I think there's a lot of folks out there that don't realize.
Some of my friends, wink, wink, that come to the show all the time. Wink, wink, nod, nod. But I mean, I think it's a way you're raised. There's a big meat that we need to put on the table where it says, okay, well, black people. But that's not true. Because we always forget the fact that West Indian and American people are, like, completely different people. And they all... Because remember, I don't know if you saw, I said, I'm not a fan of the music, soca. Not a fan of soca music. But I said it out loud. And what happened was a non-nuanced conversation. It was an un-nuanced conversation. I had an opinion, a musical variety opinion. I was called uncultured. I was like, you don't get it. Because there's a sensitivity to it, because I don't think West Indian people have the – I'm West Indian. My family's from the islands for the most part. I mean, we were raised more British,
boy.
But I get it.
Some of the best soca ever comes from Barbados.
I don't know about that. that we, I don't think, have the social outlet for dissent. I don't think we have social – we do not have the language of dissent in our culture. So you can't go, no, not for me. You know what I mean? We don't have that language to go, okay, well, that's for you, that's for me. Everything has to be for everybody. And if you that's not – for me to then say and rebuke soca offended people on such a level. Like, I've seen people in that thread more angry at that than I've seen them angry at anything else. You like that? How could you not like it? And I was like, it's just syncopated noise that people use to be unrepressed in a public space. And I'm like, you don't get it. Don't get it. And I was like, because of your Judeo-Christian beliefs, you're not allowed to do certain things, and this music allows you a release in a socially accepted way. You're thinking too much into it. I'm like, that's generally what things are. You got to think into
it. I think they're just more protective of their culture.
Yeah.
I think what it is.
But these are the same people that will run. They're the same people that will literally, because remember that same thread, they kept on bringing up hip-hop. And I was like, who brought up hip-hop? Why do you keep on bringing up hip-hop? They're two separate issues. So it's like, well, it's not like your music before your murder. I'm like, you've heard your grandfather say that, and now that's just what you say. Because no person our age goes, you and your murder hip-hop. Who says that?
That just goes to show you. They feel attacked. You know, you ever argue with white folks online, some of the silly things that they say, you know, when you're just trying to have a point, you know, that's the same thing. When different cultures collide and people don't realize that we have multiple cultures within the black collective.
I have to be very careful with the white people I know, to be fair. I can't be with too many. I could deal with some combative black people. Like, for whatever reason, that's my allowance. I can't. Mm-hmm. I need all my white people I deal with have to be nuanced, because that'd be that's too blunt. You know what I'm saying? That's a bridge too far for me to then have to argue with you over that. No, fam. So every white person I know, even if I don't have their beliefs, they'll at least hear me out, and we can kind of go back and forth. But if you're someone who is like a white version of a hotel, I can't even bother. I can't even give you the time of day. That'd be too much. It'd be on top of you just being obstinate. It'd be also like, nope. That's like watching a movie.
Absolutely. I feel the same way about men that around. Like, I cannot spend all day. If you really cannot respect me in my circle, in a close, tight circle, as an intelligent human being and worthy of respect, then if you can't do that, you have issues doing that, I also can't mess with you too deeply.
No, it's too much, because it's like, see, the value statement is on, like, for me, I'm like, oh, it's like when I talk to my daughter, if I'm talking to you, I know that when we have a conversation, that I'm in a position of, the power structure swings in my way. So you could be like, well, I have a doctorate in so-and-so, don't matter. So I know that the power structure is just crazy how that works, right? So I have to take it from the perspective of, if you have an opinion, I need to, this is so heady, but your opinion needs to have a greater value than mine, at least in a conversation, So, like, if you said about my field, A, B, C, and D, about how my experience, I can't, my opinion on your experience does not have the same weight that your opinion on your experience has. That makes sense.
Absolutely.
You can't go like, oh, I get harassed. But if my experience is that women don't get harassed, I cannot go to you toe-to-toe going, you're wrong. I have to take your opinion under complete advisement and say, you know what, that's what you've gone through. And now we have to speak, face at least
what
our
think
conversations
that would be
of your
wise.
Experience.
I
yes.
think that would be wise. I often
that's what
I expect
white people to do with me.
Yeah, but it would be wise for a white person if you're not walking the streets as a black person, if you haven't lived the life of a black person, perhaps even if your experience is telling you, I don't see any of that, perhaps it is wise to defer to the black person in that moment.
Yeah,
but
even if you could think I have another opinion, and you could say my opinion kind of differs, sorry, my opinion differs, but I can't even say that didn't happen. But it happens to you, kind of get some understanding, like, how is that situation, blah, blah, what have you. Then I guess, go in my experience, this was the case. Does that ever happen to you? But there's a more constructive way of disagreeing when I'm in a position, a power position over you, at least in socially speaking. Or even socioeconomically. Because I'm talking to somebody and I know, you know when your socioeconomic status is higher than the other person. And this is something we don't like to talk about. We don't like to talk about it. Nobody wants to admit that when you're talking to someone you know is in a, came up rough or is in a more financially
stressed status. But what is it that points that out to us? And I'm not talking about arbitrary things like maybe what they have on or materialistic things.
Now, this might sound real upstairs Downton Abbey
to me. That's why I'm letting you go.
I would be raised that way. But you have a general understanding when you're talking to somebody, when they're like going like you go like, oh, so I'm going to I'm going to eat tonight. He's like, going out to eat. And then right there in the back of your head, you're like, And it's like, all right, so you're going out to eat? It's like, yeah, I'm going to get some food, whatever. And their response to it is such as like, ooh, la-de-da, you're eating it outside, huh? Then no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, this person's living a different life than me. Or if I'm like, all right. I mean, obviously, you don't know for sure, but you have a feeling. Let's put it that way. You have a feeling when you're like, all right, this person's not where I'm at. Like, they're working hand to mouth or whatever situation. Or if someone's higher, I always can tell when someone's doing a little bit better than me too, because then it just starts rattling off places they've fucking been. But there's a casualness of what they're saying. So if you casually go like, oh yeah, this was at Burma last week, or the do thing, but they're not showing off. That's just part of their everyday experience. They're like, oh, okay, this person's operating at least socially, economically, a level that I'm not at. I'm not just bopping off to Burma. You know what I'm saying? So also if someone's like talking about going to Chicago, like it's a trip of the year, then I'm all right. Well, and it's not a fear induced thing. It's not like I'm scared of flying. It's just like, oh, I really don't get anywhere. And again, a lot of this is just assumptions on my part and the heuristics you use, but I don't think we talk about it because of this digression we're having right now. Is how do you know? But it informs a lot of our interactions. Somebody is not on the same socioeconomic class as you, their experiences are almost as alien to you as yours are to theirs. As a white person is to a black person. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree. I think it's less.
Let me give you a for instance. You have someone who grew up, because I think there's always a big, this is what big issue I have with a lot of our the woke stuff, is that the woke stuff never includes the people who are really needing the help. So if you have someone who grew up, doesn't matter how they grew up. Let's say right now they live in a project, they're doing the best they can. They work at McDonald's. They're decent. They're working hard. They go into, they're trying to get an education. Let's say Bronx community, blah, 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 blah. They're 33. Mm-hmm. They work, have maybe a kid or two. They're not early, you know what I'm saying? They're not like hand to mouth, but like, you know, this person has never really known anything other than struggling to kind of get food in the fridge. And I'll say the second person, they're both black, they're both from the same place. This person's black, but let's say this person lived in the suburbs, went to school in the city, went away to college, you know, educated but seen things, you know, has friends from all over the map. It's not crazy. Mm-hmm. Those people get into a conversation about the R. Kelly thing. do you believe that they'd be able to find consensus in the same way that if you were talking about a racial thing, I'm framing it wrong, but do you not feel
their
point of view would be different?
I hear what you're saying, but the thing is, it's not the socioeconomic status that, you know, it is. It's the things that come with the socioeconomic status. It's like, you know, when they try to bring up the things that happen in the hood. And really, you could go to any place that has poverty and a lot of crime, anywhere in the world, and you're going to find certain factors. You know, you're going to find certain ways of life. You're going to find certain things that are very common when you have poverty, when you have education that is subpar. You're going to find certain things that are common. I just don't, it's not socioeconomic status per se. It's a lot of the things that come with it, I think. You know, like the whole no snitching. When you talk about no snitching, you have a group of people that are like, you know, with the whole 6ix9ine thing. You had some people that were like, well, they did such and such to him. Why should he be loyal? Which, you know, personally is more logical. But you have people.
Everyone
like,
who
no,
said that, I felt okay.
What'd you say?
I thought that everyone who said that, no shit, why did he not snitch? These niggas literally had his worst interest at heart. I found that people, and I don't say socioeconomic, but I felt like people who, like I always said, there's an experiment, a sociological experiment I want to run. And I want to do a test of 10 people. I want 3 of them to be from higher economic, another 3 to be from lower, and then kind of a control group in the middle that's from wherever. And then I want to ask them a variety of questions from, like, what do you agree with snitching? Do you think women can be equal? You know, like, ask all the Facebook touchstone questions and see what the responses are.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I wouldn't even make a hypothesis either way because I could see that going either way, to be honest with you. I really can because, I mean, I grew up in the projects. So, you know.
So do you feel on some level that my making that assessment has rankled your sense of identity in a way?
Well, no, it's kind of just given me a clue because I've always said this to people because I feel like the way things are organized here in Long Island are so different to Brooklyn, and I often talk about that because growing up in New York City, you are exposed to more no matter what. And I think Long Island you have smaller towns where you have people who are isolated more. So you find a more in my opinion, a more ignorant group of people in Long Island when you're talking hood, and where you're going to find a more diverse.
Where did your Long Island start? Because I grew up by LaGuardia Airport, and no one left. No one ever really went anywhere. Everyone were born, and they were there, and they would go away to, like, parties, but they wouldn't go anywhere. Because I remember when I was just really going to tell on myself. But when I was in eighth grade, it was, you want to go take this girl somewhere? And I was like, I'm taking her going to Broadway. I took this hood rat to fucking Broadway show. Oh,
I
damn.
Broadway
I took
shows,
this
thank
hood,
you very
but
much.
But no, said, no, I know you do, but I'm saying, like, my instinct was to say, oh, let's go to fucking go to Broadway. And so, and saw, what's that word? What's that shit called? What was the one? Not a Mice and Men. Jesus Christ. But it was a Steinbeck. It was not a Steinbeck. It was a Tennessee Williams play. And that was my instinct as an eighth grader to be like, okay, the girl's name. Oh, I won't say the girl's name because one of her family members might be listening. But she had a name that sounded fake and made up. And her parents had named it. It's something like kind of like Donkey Kong. Like it was. Not Donkey Kong, but it was like the same level of sense as Donkey Kong. And I go like, let's just say Donkey Kong. I'm going to say this girl's name, and I guarantee you it was just, oh, we ain't shit, and then I'm going to have to deal with that. So Donkey Kong goes, oh, Daniel, we going out. What you taking me? Eighth grade. I'm like, oh, I think we go to Manhattan. She's like, Manhattan? Oh, they never go to Manhattan. I don't go to Manhattan. We be going. I said, well, you know, my aunt woke the shit up. We'll go see this play. Tennessee, I cannot remember the name of it for the life of me. But we go, and I was like, oh, we're going to see a show. A show? Oh, that's fancy. So we go, first off, she had no concept of how to get to Manhattan. She didn't know, like, okay, I've never been. She hasn't been. I think she said she went, like, once on a school trip.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's never been to the, she wasn't in the city. It was maybe ninth grade. She had not been to the city since, like, a school trip. She went, like, once or twice. We live in, you know, I don't know if you were LaGuardia. It's not far from the city. So we go in, we get out there, we had this play, and it was, like, a three-act, and it had intermission. It goes, so what? That's a ripoff. They were going to go. I was like, no, it was intermission. You have to use the bathroom because you can't use the bathroom when it's on. Yeah, that's all bullshit. It's too many, also, too many white people here. What's going on? What are they talking about? This is boring. Why don't they have, like, explosions? There's a whole kit and caboodle of things that you would hope a black person wouldn't say out loud in mixed company, she was saying. And my aunt literally was fed up with me that I brought this chick and made her spend, you know, hard-earned money to someone ask why are there explosions at a Tennessee Williams play. Then let me leave, get home. She was like, oh, that was, that, you know, she said to my aunt, she's like, oh, that was really gay. Get home.
Oh, so
like,
I know that
well,
didn't help the American plight in the eyes of your Caribbean aunt.
No, it was just, I don't, yeah, it's American. She was fed up the whole thing. She just fed up the whole thing. She's stushed. She's super, super stushed. So she could have literally been like, oh, you're gay. What the fuck are you talking about? But I say that to say that she wasn't alone in that. Because that my neighborhood's not far away, just the instinct to do more than the neighborhood, going like, I'm here, I know these people, I'm comfortable here, and not even in New York City, having access to Broadway, having access to museums, having access to all of this stuff, they weren't using any of it because they weren't going to leave their, I guess, for lack of a better term, their town, their tribe. And being
and that's what happens. You become uncultured. And so when you get into spaces that have people, you know, with wider ranges, you know, you stick out like a sore thumb. And yeah, you might have some ideas that'll make other people go, yo, are you kidding me? And I mean, I must experience that on Facebook every single day.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that just nuts?
I hear ideas and I'm like, how is it that you can think that way? How is it you can think that way? But, you know, depending on
and
people's
this year,
upbringing.
Of our Lord, 2019, and then you meet that same person with a kid on the weekend and be like, oh, this person's taking care of somebody. This is someone's father? Oh, no. Oh,
well,
no, you know. No. That point of view should not get passed down.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad point of view. That's not a good point of view. But I say
and
that
that's another
that
part that.
Yeah.
And we don't just. Not we, but people who are classist don't only have contempt for folk who they think are ignorant. The other way around, I think, happens as well. Like, you know.
Especially, that's why we have Trump. That's especially why we have Trump. The idea of the intellectual left, the intellectual class, the coastal elite, if you will, is a repudiation of people who you know, you're different. How dare you? I oh, damn, that's another story I was about to tell that's very, very fucking direct. It's a quiet, quick one. This happens to me a lot. Let's just say this happens to me a lot, where I'll deal with somebody and I'll start, you know, I don't know, you've hung out before, you know how I speak, and go, why do you care? I get that told a lot. Why do you care? And it's not that important. It's not that serious. You're putting too much thought into it. And I feel like, for the most part, people don't put a lot of thought into it, not because they're stupid, just because they don't want to, or just fair. But I think there's a repudiation of people who, like, will, like, put thought into things and peel things apart and parse things out, like, as intellectual or classes, or people who are like, well, this, like, maybe you shouldn't eat corn dogs for every meal.
That's another
you know
thing.
What I mean?
You know, you see certain people. I remember I was working with this woman. Granddaughter, whatever, and you know she had diabetes. She was just sharing it with me. She was an older woman. By older, I mean like in her 60s, and she was just like, "Yeah, you know, I got this diabetes that I gotta. The doctor says I need to start managing." And I said, "You know, you're drinking water," and she was like, "No, I like my soda." And she left a liter of soda by her bed at night, and that's what she used to drink. And I was like, "That is."
Bananas.
You really want to keep your feet, ma'am. Like, for real. But some people don't know. They have certain habits that they've cultivated. That's another thing you could see, people's eating habits. Especially
it's also not culturally unacceptable. So, like, if I, like, came in to your house. I was like, oh, I'm dating you. I'm coming to your house. I'm like, oh, hey, baby, when you get to the bed, I can see like a 1 liter soda by your bed. I'm now casting aspersions. So I'm like, oh. I said, what type of low debt? What type of low ass shit is this?
Mm-hmm.
A liter of fucking soda. That's, or how, as we said it growing up, that's down market.
Well, that's what you can see the parallels. It's not just low socioeconomic status. It's all of the things that unfortunately come with poverty. And unfortunately, because of the power structure in this country, black people often and brown people and whatever you want to call them often face poverty at you know, disproportionate rates.
Yeah, and I think that's when it comes into when you have an R. Kelly situation. I mean, I'm going to tie it back down a little thing, but that's my issue. There it is. I lost the thread for a bit, but I found it. We are poor and ignorant when it comes to R. Kelly going like, hey, you know what? Like, we all know somebody who was kind of loose with young girls, and we're fine. It's fine. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that old chestnut about, like, the uncle that you're not supposed to leave around the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just something we all just accepted as, like, all right, it's cool. There's an uncle that will molest your kids. Just keep them away from him. Fine. Mm-hmm. Just don't leave him alone because he's, like, a molester. Now, that's insanity as a conceit. But we're fine.
Well,
that's
understand it for black people as a collective, why we shied away from, and why in a lot of instances we weren't able to talk about these things. You know, you had black people that really had this idea towards hardship and stress and all that stuff. Like, nobody don't have time. We're trying to survive. You know, so I understand, and we didn't trust outsiders to come in and deal with our inside issues. And granted, and understandably so, because a lot of the time, even today, you still call the cops and you end up in more issues than you did before
you called the cops. You could end up getting clipped. You could end up getting shot.
I mean,
they come over there and end up shooting you because you
necessarily. I don't condemn people for having this protective nature of all of us.
I get that. I really do. But, like, we got to start condemning it now. Because, like, the benefits are no longer apparent as much as the negative concept of people actively defending monstrous acts. And once you defend, so when it starts lending itself to defending monstrous acts, so vocally and so. Because I've seen, like, a woman go, like, I was raped, right? Like, I said it. The woman has said it in a public place, I was raped. And, you know, like, I like, that's not how. Because I think a lot of the argument was when the Michael Jackson one was, like, why are they responding that way? Like, why are they not, like, fucked up about it? And then I think somebody, like, a victim said, like, hey, they lived with this and they've made peace with it. So they're not going to be sitting there weeping and crying. Not everyone responds the same way. They probably don't want to be seen as victims, et cetera. Someone told him, he says, what were you doing to make the person do what they did to you? Like, are we sure that even happened to you, or are you just saying shit? Like, it's that belief is turning people into monsters. It's like making people, like, rather than admit that Michael Jackson may have, and I must use the actual nomenclature, what he actually did, clap some kids' cheeks, right? Not molest.
Ooh.
Right? Not molest, not. Because that's not bad touch, but, like, actually commit a sexual act. We'll end up, like, if someone goes, like, it happened to me, and the scans, rather than go, like, you know what, you have value, let's hear what you have to say, and then change or keep our opinion based on what you said, we're just instinctively, like, white blood cells, got to get them out of here.
Yep, because they want to protect the legacy of a black person that was able to surpass so much. You know, Michael Jackson represents a lot for the collective community. And you know what? If he molested kids, to a lot of folks, that is not enough reason to cut him off his pedestal. And that's just what it is.
Ain't that about a bitch?
Yeah,
I also heard someone say this other day that we shouldn't throw Bill Cosby away because even if he did rape those people, they were mostly white, and that doesn't matter. They don't count.
Oh, yikes.
He said that in public. It wasn't even online. He said that in public. He said that shit at Applebee's at like 8 o'clock in the afternoon to a complete stranger. He was like, it didn't matter. But he's like, if they're white, you know what I'm saying? They've done enough to us that we should be able to do some stuff to them.
I know a lot of people that feel that way, you know. So.
But when does it stop? When does it stop? When does it end? Like, when do you go, like, okay, we need to figure a thing out and go, like, hey, let's have some nuance. Because what's going to happen is people are going to figure out how to kind of maneuver in a world before we do, right? I think I've said this before in the show, and I'll say it again. Other groups are going to figure out how to maneuver and find nuance and find ways to exist and get better. And we won't. And it'll be like we're stunted in this, like, you ever met, I mean, you obviously have as a social worker, when someone has been abused by somebody, and rather than kind of get past their abuse, they kind of like hold it like a badge, and they're angry, and they keep fucking things up and being mad and making terrible choices because they stay on the moral high ground of being abused. But then they're like 45, 50, they get old, but they've not progressed. So the same person they were when they got abused, but like now no one gives a shit because they've just been mad. Does that make sense?
Well, that's everybody, I think, you know, especially in addiction, especially with mental health. If they have a diagnosis, which I often explain, you know, you get that as soon as you come in the hospital because we can't bill otherwise. So, you know, and you can't really diagnose people that have drug and alcohol issues anyway because the drug and alcohol is really skew those. So you really should be sober for some time before you want to get a dependable diagnosis. But they will wear that badge of honor. This is why I can't be better. Or, you know, if it's trauma, this person did this to me, and this is why I can't be better. And it's the same thing black people do.
Yeah,
this is why we know why we are where we're at. But why we can't get better from now, outside of the confines of the things that are still happening, because, you know, systemic racism is not over.
Sure.
But outside of the confines of things that are still happening, why we are not able to move forward. Someone made a post about, it was a black man, you know, apologizing for how he had failed the youth. You know, like, I haven't been there to lead you in the right things and glorify the right. And the argument that ensued from angry black men on this post, about no, don't, you know, don't you're trying to attack the black man, the black boys and stuff like that. And it's just, it's very crazy.
That narrative. But it seems like we're the only fucking people doing this. Like, I don't see, and I try to be invested and say, like, there's like a internal civil war between the sexes and other races. It seems like we're the only ones who are like going at each other like this at such high educational levels too. It's not like just street niggas fighting each other. It's like, you got people with degrees going, there's a war on the black man. And like, at some point or the other, the world's going to pass us by. Socially, I'm saying. The world's going to pass us by socially.
Oh, well, yeah. Absolutely.
I hope people don't realize, and I want you to hear me clearly, there's not we don't have forever to figure this out. Because there's other cultures and other groups of people working their way through. And we don't really, you know, we're not just guaranteed a spot because bad shit happened to us. It's bad shit's happened to everybody on a level. Everyone's been fucked over by whites or been fucked over by some group. And sooner or later, someone else is going to, like, leapfrog us up to be number two or number one or figure it out. And we ain't going to have, because the thing is, if, let's say, the Chinese people become the number one, we can't even blame racism anymore because they didn't enslave us. We can't be mad at them. We can't be mad at the power structure the way we used to be mad at it. We need to figure this out and get on board.
Well, I don't mind being upset at the power structure. My thing is, our focus in moving forward has to be inward. And for some reason, when it comes to black folks, and we have to look at us and how we treat each other and the things that we perpetuate that, yes, we all know was started by the white man. When we look at those things, I mean, Dr. Joy DeGry constantly talk about this book because it was life-changing, post-traumatic slave syndrome. She talks about how slave women, black women, began to raise their daughters and their sons very differently in the slave world, in the post.
Because they had different functions, though. I think, as a slave, you had – the problem with being – not problem, but when you're being a slave, you had functions. Like you were the man, you had things that you needed to do, and you had hardships that you needed to overcome, and you had to raise your children to those hardships. But they're very specific hardships of abuse and violence and hard work. And women had different hardships they needed to overcome.
But even things like the fact that they used to move the males so often. So even when you had, you know, you had your little families that you tried to keep, take the males and move them around and use them as breeders. So this idea of Papa as a rolling stone was really started within our community very early. And the fact that as a woman, you had to be self-sufficient and able because this man could be taken from you at any moment, and you still had to be able to go on for these kids. That idea was very ingrained early on. And when you're raising girls so differently, black young girls so differently from black young males, and then they grow up and they're incompatible, why is everybody surprised?
Yeah, because that's the big crux of this conversation is the fact that we, you know, we started this, the Cardi B was just a jump off, but the fact that she, you know, like we're looking at, she's being looked at as a villain in order to assuage everybody above the other dudes. And you're right, we raised completely differently and given different ideals and setups. But my concern, and you could probably answer this, is why is the understanding? I mean, I remember I think I did tie this together. Like, I feel like when the black man says the thing about there's a war in the black man by the black woman and the white man, they're all on it. It sounds very Charlottesville to me. The language is very Charlottesville, very they will not replace us, very tiki torchy.
That's a strong comparison.
It's a comparison that lands for me. Because you got people saying, apropos of nothing, that they're trying to be replaced, they're trying to be neutered, and they're trying to be taken out by nebulous other. Mm-hmm. Only people I ever see being so strong about being replaced and being shut up and being taken out are white nationalists about everybody and black men on Facebook.
Imagine sitting on Facebook. Well, I mean, it is a reality that black men are public enemy number one. I just want to make sure I state that.
Yeah, they are public enemy number one. I'm not saying that they're a public enemy. Yes, I'll give you that. That's a fact. But that's not they're not saying that. They're not saying like over getting shot by the police. They've been saying that, like, hey, the gays are responsible because they're out there trying to make men effeminate. The women are responsible by not giving them the respect they're due. That's what I'm talking
and,
about. I'm
and
talking
that's
about, like, the actual
that's
fact.
Part so, of the problem. Because, again, we're deciding to go against us, whether Willie Lynch was real or not. You're continuing and perpetuating what white people started. And so that's why I say, when are we going to start looking at us to say stop the colorism? Constantly,
you can't
how
stop
they
that.
Said, you know, they had the light-skinned people with the better hair in the house, and they had the dark-skinned people with the whatever outside. But when you get within communities of color, you have the foolishness with the colorism. You know,
it's
and
the only way to
also what I find
is
with
if
the
we
colorism
gotta all have
too.
This discussion.
Hmm?
I said the only way this gets fixed if there's a discussion. Like, all right, we're gonna have this discussion. Hey, you know what? There's things that we need to, as a people, say, like, you know, let's figure this thing out. But I'll
see when we try to. Black people go so hard at other black folks. You know, if light-skinned girls try to talk about their experience of colorism,
they're not allowed.
Dark-skinned girls is like, I do not want to hear it. And it's the same thing being perpetuated. Oh, I don't want to hear you, house nigga, because you got it good. And the house
or you like, women going, what's my issue? And then you got men going, I don't want to hear your issue.
Exactly. Because you don't have
we're
it
literally
like a
playing
black man.
Victim Olympics. It's victim Olympics. And going like, you only hear you.
Keep black folks chasing their tail consistently because we can't take accountability for where we're at. We can't say,
and I'm
going to
with another hot take, Christina.
Mm-hmm.
A hot ass take. The white man started the framework of this. But we mastered this shit, and we put so many wrinkles in this that what the white man started, the white man couldn't conceive of what we've done to this shit.
Absolutely.
Because
the
white man separated us, we turned this shit into a hall of fucking mirrors of cultural ones. You have West Indian against black, men versus women, light versus dark, black fat versus black skinny, south versus north, west versus east, educated versus uneducated.
Classes.
There's enough for every fucking body. People who don't want kids, who have kids, Christians versus non-Christians.
Oh, yeah.
Everything you fucking want is there, and it's only us against us. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, if a white person didn't want to have a kid, you wouldn't give a shit. Black woman goes, I don't want to have a kid, they're a fucking whore. How's that work? Do not know.
And that,
so how do you see
it
being fixed? So, you know, let's try to...
It has to, you have to be able to be open, you know, for example, let's say someone who, you know, I myself, and I do identify as a feminist. I'm not even going to say no third, second, whatever way.
Shit.
Yeah. I do identify as a feminist in the very, very base meaning of the word that you would find on Google, although there are plenty of feminists who espouse things that I do not agree with, because I don't usually subscribe to groups, I subscribe to principles. So I am a feminist, and by being a feminist, what I have to do is make sure that I'm not biased. One of the things, in when I work on a rehab as well as a psych ward in a hospital, blah, 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 and a lot of times they find each other and have sex. And
love doing that.
Oftentimes when we have morning meeting where, you know, the doctors and the nurses and everybody comes together and we discuss each patient, they frame those conversations about whoever had sex as the girl was preyed upon. And
no, that's not cool.
When you're dealing with addicts and when you're dealing with that population, people who often are going to get into sex work to pay for drugs, you have to understand
also,
that a lot of these women
too. They're also boundaryless. Look, they're boundaryless people looking for a cheap high, and fucking is the cheapest high you can get.
Yes. So that's going to happen in early recovery, but you have to understand these women have had certain skills to survive, and therefore they're going to use those manipulative skills. And sometimes the woman is the predator. So I had to say in a meeting one time, listen, the same way
more times than not,
that white people got to watch their privilege and you got to watch your bias when you're dealing with a black patient that you may not quite understand. Women have to, you know, not always believe that women are just inherently the victim.
But that's a form of misogyny too, by constantly saying it's you know, it's fine, don't worry about it. She's a victim. But that just ties back to the original topic perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Is Cardi, there you go. That's classic shit right there. Is Cardi B a victim? No.
No.
Is Cardi B a predator? No. So that's not the term you'd fucking use for what she did. She wasn't being a predator. She was using a situation. Well, Cardi B was somebody in the sex industry doing what people in the sex industry do, but people in the sex industry.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally two people better term would be two predators in a space, and she was able to kind of come out with a win in that situation. But she could have easily come out with a loss. There was no victims in the story. The men she was fucking with would have easily fucking bashed their head in and fucking took a box. So let's call a spade a spade. Is she right? No. The thing that she's a victim, I saw some people go like, oh, no, she had a rough experience. Fuck that. No, she didn't have a rough experience. She had a mom. She had family. There was other options. She went to school. She, you know what I'm saying? She knew better. She knows right from wrong. She's not a sociopath. You know what I'm saying?
She made certain choices. You know,
she made choices, yeah.
Every day.
She made choices, though. But, I mean, she's not Bill Cosby. She wasn't Bill Cosby. She wasn't drugging people who weren't in the situation. She wasn't taking something from them other than the money they were going to give to her anyway. So
took more than the money. I mean,
yeah, I'm just saying.
She probably took more than the money. You know, I have a problem with saying that that's not predatory behavior.
It is predatory. It's predatory. Yeah, I'm just saying that they were both predators in a predatory situation. There was no victims, is what I'm saying. Everybody in there was kind of doing their own thing, and she was able, because you only do shit like that in that world. Everybody's trying to get their own shit. So
true.
My own argument, if you want to call her a predator and you want to call her wrong, I'll give you that. But what I won't do is allow people to then say that she's in the same conversation.
Absolutely.
No, that's not even remotely the same. Someone goes, where's the outrage? What outrage?
And that's what bothers me, because why would we have outrage about a rapper talking about things
robbing people
that they used to do? I mean, yeah.
A rapper robbed somebody, then that's a story. That's good. That's real good. Because Biggie did it. Everyone said that they took these stick up kids, blah, 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 blah. She used a woman's version of stick up is that. Fucking knock a nigga out, take his bread. She ain't going to put a gun to your head. You know what I'm saying? She ain't about to, like, body you up. She's going to give you some, she's going to give you a little, she's going to fuck your drink up and roll your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you would have said this shit, let's say 3 years ago, before all of this backlash happened, I would have been like, fair enough, I get it, makes sense. But because niggas need to kind of dig their heels in and protect their golden rapists for whatever the reason, niggas have locked the fuck in with this whole setup. But that's just was a final thought. If we were to, like, figure out how to get a dialogue going between not just us, obviously, but as a people, how would it start? It's a big question, but how would it start?
Communication, and I just actually read this, somebody said on Facebook, communication starts with empathy. And we don't really give a shit about each other.
There's two types of empathy, right? So there's the empathy of, like, oh, that's fucked up. Right? Like, oh, that's fucked up. Like, that person got burnt. Like, I could see that happen to me. But then there's social empathy where you go, like I have social empathy because it's like, why would someone in the wrong sex hate me? I did nothing to them. But also, from their perspective, the last time they saw a black face, they had to move. So, like, I think that's fucked up, but I also understand from their perspective why they would feel a way when a bunch of black people start moving into their neighborhood, because it's going to change. Now, does that excuse their action? No. But I get it.
Absolutely not. You can understand, and I understand why I have, you know, you have males that are defending certain things to the death of them because they do feel as if one of the few things that they have, especially black men, which is what they cling to, which is whatever definitions of manhood that they espouse, is being attacked. I can understand that and still believing that it's foolishness, but I can still understand that how a person feels. And I can't have a conversation when you don't care. And that's why I don't have conversations with certain white folks or men, because at the end of the day, certain white folks don't give a damn about black people. And certain men don't give a damn about women. So I cannot have a conversation. And I
Or if they give a damn, they don't give a damn in a way that matters, where it's like, is this opinion going to change? Are you capable of taking yourself out of it and learning and saying, like, hey, you know what? You're right here. I went too far. Or, hey, I made a mistake when it comes to this sort of thing. Or do you have that ability to make that shift in your head? And if the answer is
no. And a lot of people do not, especially online, even with religion. I'm not going to talk about something that to some is so important when someone is just trying to shit on it, versus someone who, well, I don't understand this. Can you explain it? Or this doesn't make sense to me. There's a difference between someone that's like, I don't get why you look at it this way, versus someone that's seeing it as an attack and is already in defense mode and has already decided how they feel about it. There's no conversation,
not
there.
A fight. I don't want to have a fight. I don't want to fight. I want to, like I think I was in a conversation today about, like, the earth being flat. Or not earth being flat. About vaccination. And I was like, I'm not even going to have this. I'm not going to have a conversation. There's nothing I'm going to say to you that's going to make sense to you. The science is already there. So, like, you know what I mean? There's nothing I can say to you that's already been said a trillion times and proved by 85 million fucking people. You've already locked in your head that this is what it is. For me to tell you no, you're defensive and you're going to try to fight your point. I'm too old to be fighting with people over shit like that.
And I've listened to a lot of flat earthers' arguments. When it first came out, I was like,
me too.
Why? I want to know what you're, you know, and then it was very, very bad, like, arguments and things that you learn in science in like eighth grade, and I was like, oh, okay, and I left it alone from there, you know, because I'm always
because it's something else. I believe those arguments are not what they are sensed to be because it's, they get too personal too quick. I think the flat earth arguments and those facts arguments are connected to something else. I've not figured out what yet, but that's a deeper psychological, sociological issue that those arguments are tied to because they get mm-hmm. personal too quick for them just to be intellectual arguments. So mm-hmm. they get very personal yeah. very fast. I've yet
Absolutely.
To have a conversation with a flat earther or anti-vaxxer where it's like, oh, no, these are my findings. Like, it's never a casual conversation. It's always right to the fucking throat, aggressive, angry, personal attacks right away. You know what I mean? And I figure, like,
it's
connected to the personality in some way. I just don't know why this. Like, why do
and
people
that's a
tie
good
their...
point you bring up as far as the question you asked about where we move forward from. You know, you have to be able to stop personalizing this. You know, I haven't had all of the best experiences with men, but I have come to understand all men are not one blanket brushstroke, you know.
Nope.
So you have to be able to not personalize these things. Oh, well, my boy got accused of rape, you know, back in 97 and she lied. And, you know,
that was one instance. That was one instance. And that can't be
them,
all.
For them, that put in their mind, women lie about rape.
It happens.
They didn't think about the bigger picture.
Then more times than not, they're not lying. Yeah.
Yeah, there
that's
you
like
go.
If someone goes like, I didn't lynch a nigga. It's like, oh, okay, cool. It never happens. But real quick, knock the head out. Did you watch Sons of Anarchy?
I love
it. Real Sons crazy
of
pivot. Were you a fan of Juice?
Who's Juice?
She was the one with the bald head. He was Shades on Luke Cage.
Oh yes, he was a liar.
Wait, hold on, Sam. Because we have some big news. Shout out to him,
what?
Theo Rossi, and the folks at Ounce Water and the new network. They're our new sponsor. Get Ounce. We're gonna be interviewing him in the next couple of weeks.
Nice.
Yeah, we're going to be asking him all the questions about Sons of Anarchy, how it would be on the cast, try to
he
find out.
Cute.
What yeah, we're going to find out if he's single, find out what his situation is, see if we get some of you bitter women on board of man. Tune in next
he's
week
fond.
When we talk about this is next week's episode. Why bitch is so bitter? So yeah, tune in. But yeah, now we're going to interview him and find out what's going on, what he's got going on. It's their new season, Luke Cage, coming up on the new, you know, the new network and all that stuff. But make sure you get all your water needs from a Mr. Rossi. We'll have that coming in the future. Thank you so much for coming in, Christina. It was a really good talk. I figured that's where I wanted to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And everybody, too, who's listened to this after, and maybe you didn't want to call in because you didn't want to, like, feel dumb or whatever your situation is. Please write in because what I'm going to do is, because I get it. Because whenever we do these heady ones, we get very little response. And I figure it's because people don't want to feel silly, which is fine, right?
Yeah.
Email, you can do it anonymous. I'll run them by Christina, and I'll get her answers, and I'll read them on air next week.
Awesome.
Cool. Okay. Enjoy the rest of your week, Christina. Talk to you later.
You too. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
We are Sex Mabob, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.